Suspended above Owl Creek Bridge, a gentleman awaits execution. His hands bound behind his back, a noose around his neck, Peyton Farquhar stands with remarkable dignity despite his circumstances. Federal troops surround him with mechanical precision, officers maintaining proper distance, sentinels at attention, two privates ready to remove the plank beneath his feet. As death approaches, Farquhar's senses heighten extraordinarily. The rushing water below seems to whisper secrets that drown out all other sounds. When he closes his eyes, attempting to conjure his wife and children's faces, his watch's ticking transforms into hammer blows against his skull. Time stretches impossibly as his mind races with desperate calculations of escape. If only his hands were free, he might dive into the stream below, swim to shore, and flee through the forest to his home. This moment, this suspended breath between life and death, reveals how desperately consciousness fights against its own extinction. What happens in that final fraction of a second when we face the inevitable? Peyton Farquhar is no common criminal, but a wealthy Alabama plantation owner and passionate Confederate supporter. Though circumstances prevented him from joining the Army officially, he burns to serve the Southern cause in any capacity. His plantation represents not merely wealth, but identity, a physical manifestation of his place in the social order that Northern forces now threaten. One fateful evening, a gray-clad soldier rides to Farquhar's gate requesting water. While his wife fetches it, the soldier mentions that Union forces have reached Owl Creek Bridge and are rebuilding it for their advance. He notes that driftwood has accumulated against the pier and would burn easily, a subtle suggestion that a civilian might strike a blow for the Confederacy. What Farquhar doesn't realize is that this soldier is actually a federal scout in disguise, deliberately setting a trap. The Northerner plays perfectly on Southern psychology, exploiting the planter's desire to prove himself, his frustration at being sidelined from the conflict, his need to defend his homeland. It's psychological warfare at its most cunning, using Farquhar's own values against him. As the plank falls away beneath Farquhar's feet, something extraordinary happens. The rope breaks. He plunges into the water, awakening with heightened senses. He sees individual insects on the water's surface, hears distinct ripples, and perceives leaf veins with impossible clarity. Looking up, he observes soldiers in remarkable detail, their coat buttons, skin texture, even the marksman's gray eye through rifle sights. Diving to escape bullets raining around him, he strategizes his escape. A cannonball's vortex flings him onto the southern bank, where his perceptions intensify further. Sand appears as gems and trees as giant plants with music flowing from their leaves. After traveling all day through forest, he finds a road homeward. By nightfall, exhausted yet determined, he sees his plantation. His beautiful wife stands waiting with a welcoming smile. As he rushes toward her with outstretched arms, he feels a stunning blow to his neck and sees a blinding white light. Farquhar's imagined escape powerfully demonstrates consciousness rebelling against death. In his final microseconds, his mind constructs an elaborate alternate reality where he survives and returns home. Modern research confirms what Bierce intuited. The brain, facing extinction, generates vivid sensory impressions and distorts time perception. About 20% of cardiac arrest survivors report heightened awareness and the sensation that seconds stretch into hours. Farquhar's journey follows logical progression, addressing each obstacle in sequence: the rope breaking, diving deep to avoid bullets, navigating through forest to reach home. Yet subtle clues suggest unreality. Perceptions become increasingly surreal, time and distance warp impossibly, colors grow unnaturally vivid. These inconsistencies foreshadow the revelation in the final paragraph that this entire escape occurs not in physical reality, but in the fraction of a second between the drop and the snap of the rope. The most fascinating aspect of Farquhar's experience is how it manipulates time. As he awaits execution, seconds stretch unbearably. His watch's ticking becomes deafening, each detail gaining extraordinary significance. During his imagined escape, time becomes even more elastic. He perceives bullets in flight and notices individual leaf veins with hyper-detailed precision. This manipulation reflects actual psychological phenomena. In life-threatening situations, people report time slowing down, what scientists call chronostasis or temporal dilation. This occurs because the brain processes information differently under extreme stress. The amygdala activates intensely, recording unusually detailed memories while adrenaline heightens awareness, creating the subjective experience of slowed time. Bierce's genius lies in using this psychological reality as a narrative device. The story structure mirrors Farquhar's subjective experience, beginning with meticulous descriptions, accelerating through his imagined escape, before snapping back to the brutal reality of death. Each section's pacing matches the protagonist's psychological state. The most poignant aspect of Farquhar's imagined escape is its culmination, the vision of homecoming he never achieves. After his journey, he glimpses his plantation bright and beautiful in morning sunshine. His wife waits, looking fresh and cool and sweet at the bottom of the steps. This vision represents everything he's fighting for. Not abstract political ideals, but this specific place and woman. His home embodies his identity as a Southern gentleman. His wife represents his emotional center. The tragedy deepens when we realize this vision occurs in the microsecond before death. As he rushes toward his wife, he feels a blow to his neck and sees a blinding white light, the moment when the rope snaps taut. This homecoming exists only in his mind, a final consolation before extinction. When facing death, his mind conjures not military glory, but simple human connection. The story becomes about what we live for. When stripped to its essence, Farquhar's life is defined not by ideology, but by love and connection. Peyton Farquhar was dead. His body, with a broken neck, swung gently beneath the timbers of Owl Creek Bridge. With this single sentence, Bierce collapses the elaborate fantasy we've just witnessed. The entire escape, so vividly detailed and psychologically plausible, existed only in Farquhar's dying consciousness. This narrative sleight of hand succeeds because Bierce presents the imagined escape with the same objective tone as the execution scene, exploiting our assumption that what's described is really happening. This deception makes us complicit in Farquhar's self-deception, sharing his false hope and ultimate shock. The story endures because it addresses universal human concerns about death and final moments. Bierce suggests that consciousness, facing extinction, might create elaborate alternative realities as the brain's natural response to mortal threat. Most powerfully, the story highlights the gap between subjective experience and objective reality. For Farquhar, his escape feels completely real as the execution itself. Yet objectively, it never happens. No matter how elaborate our final fantasies or how desperately consciousness fights extinction, reality ultimately reasserts itself. The rope holds.